Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This is a show I try to do every week, normally at Tuesdays at 2 p.m., where I answer questions that have been submitted and just talk about things I want to talk about. It's intended as a YouTube show, but it's also a podcast. So if you want to just listen to the audio, that's great. I'll try to read the questions that I have so you hear them, but I'm bad at reading. So I recommend watching this as a YouTube show. And this is our agenda. And I just want to kind of get started with our agenda. We have a few sponsors of the show, and some of the sponsors are things I'm doing I want to talk about. And today, that's what I want to talk about, is this online rowing class that we offer. And a lot of people want to take classes with us, and they're expensive. Not only are the classes are expensive, but you have to travel to the place, and it's kind of a vacation, but it's expensive. If you don't have a lot of money to spend on learning how to row, doing the online course and combining that with on-river practice. And we go have a lot of lessons in the online course. And we cover everything we cover in private instruction, class three schools, class four schools, and more in this online course. There's a few different offerings. One of them is a $400 rowing course. And there's some of these are free. You can just like click them if you find it. It's whitewatereducation.com. The ones that say preview, you can just watch. So a lot of the safety ones I have as free, and you can just click them. It's sort of like Gear Garage. And a lot of these videos I've also done in Gear Garage as well. But we spent more time on them. We spent money on them in a lot of cases. Like, we're not filmed the exact thing. And it's presented in order. So Gear Garage, it's probably impossible to find all the videos. Like, you could go out and like Google them all. But here, like, everything is presented in the right order, and it's organized really well in a learning platform. Like, we pay for this learning platform that hosts all this stuff. And so and there's more than this. Like, that's class two right there. There's class three videos. And some of these lessons are multiple videos. There's a lot to them. Class four. And we even have a short section of class five. And so this is a very comprehensive way to learn our philosophy and education on rowing. We put a lot of time into it. That's the big class. We know it's expensive. So we have a basics class for $95 that just goes through the class three, I think the class two lessons. So it's just an introduction to it. And there's also what we call Foundations of Swiftwater Rescue, which has, let me see if I can come down. It has, you can see what the lessons are here. And again, a lot of them are free. If it says preview, you can just log them to the site and watch them. But a lot of stuff about the equipment, about safety, knots, anchors, techniques, boat flipping, some fancy mechanical bandage stuff. So this is, it doesn't replace a rescue class, because you should do hands-on practice. But this is a lot of just the basic lecture stuff you would receive in a rescue class. It's knots, which you can practice at home. So you're ready for, you know, if you want to show up to a rescue class prepared, you can spend $25 and go through all this, get the knots down, understand the techniques for flipping boats, understand scene safety. And it's only $25. Like, we made this one as cheap as we could because it's valuable stuff. And know that we're still developing that one. Like, it's a good deal because we're continually working on that one and adding content. It's actually probably at a development phase now. I need to update that and maybe raise the price. But anyway, that's what I'll talk about today before the show. And let's get into questions. We have a lot of questions today and some kind of long ones. So we're going to just jump right into it. The first one's about the Grand Canyon permit fees. And somebody wants to get my thoughts. And so I think, if I remember right, Grand Canyon fees were like $90 a person, and they're about to go for private trips, and they're about to go to 300 and something a person. And I do the Grand Canyon like once every 5 years at most. Like, I'm not somebody who's there all the time. And you know, when I was living out of my car river guiding, that's a lot of money. But $300 for a Grand Canyon trip plus all the other things, that's a lot of money. would have kept me from going, I don't know. I can't remember what that was like living in my car. Probably still would have figured out how to go. It's hard to say. I don't think this permit fee, and again, I forget what it's like to live out of a car, so, or not have much money. So it's hard to relate, but it seems like people can afford extra money to go on a Grand Canyon trip, an extra few $100. That's just my guess. I don't know. I don't see this keeping people from going. I do want to point out that the park is probably subsidizing Grand Canyon trips right now on the private side. On the commercial side, the commercial outfitters pay a lot of fees. They pay as much as 22%. They have a sliding scale, depends on their gross. So they pay up to 22% of their income to the park service. Every single person that goes in the Grand Canyon commercially pays a percent of their money goes to the park. And it's a sizable amount of money. And I don't know how much it generates, but it definitely pays for, I'm pretty sure, the services that are provided to outfitters. And those services would be like law enforcement, would be potential helicopter evacuation if somebody gets hurt or something happens. That's having a ranger put in to explain important rules, just administering permits, things like that. Privately, I don't think private boaters are covering the costs of what the Grand Canyon National Park is providing. And just let me go back a second. I just remembered something. I'm somebody who believes like we should be allowed to do what we want our national parks and our parks, and we shouldn't have to pay for them. It seems kind of ridiculous to me that we have to pay for, when I have to pay $25 to get my car into a national park, that is incredibly frustrating to me. When I have to pay $20-$30 to camp on Forest Service land, that's incredibly frustrating to me. The problem is, like, I'm a pretty responsible camper. There's people that are idiots out there that poop everywhere, leave trash, and then these agencies have to pick up after them. And so we all have to cover the cost of sanitation, law enforcement, trash. And so if you want a campground that has some sort of law enforcement presence, some sort of trash, some sort of toilet, you probably do need to pay, unfortunately. But it's very frustrating to me to have to pay. You should be able to raft the Grand Canyon without paying. You should have to do that. Except some people do the Grand Canyon, and they don't have the right equipment. They don't have the right sanitation policies, which can cause norovirus to spread, and that affects everybody. They leave trash behind, or they don't wear the right PFDs, or they're drinking during the day, are you allowed to drink during the day on the Grand Canyon? I don't even know the rule. I think there's a rule against that. But they're doing things that are bad that cost everybody money, right? Those helicopter evacuations are expensive, and they're basically free. In the Grand Canyon, if you get hurt, a helicopter will come save you. Well, the park pays for that. And the park has a budget. And so I could see why the park recognizes that because they have to spend so much money on law enforcement and evacuations and rangers, that they should charge private boaters accordingly. So I see their perspective. My perspective is we should be allowed to use our public lands free. I'm starting to recognize there's just a lot of dummies that ruin it for the rest of us. And, you know, there's the White Claw Cowboys out there that were like people who are responsible boaters have to pay for them doing things that are irresponsible in the canyon, which requires us to have more evacuations and a presence, blah, blah, blah. So in terms of raising the fees, I'm not a fan of raising fees, but in this case, I think I'm okay with it. Again, I don't go in the Grand Canyon that much as a private boater. So it doesn't affect me that much. And again, I have a job now, so I can afford the fees. So it doesn't affect me at all. Like if I go to the Grand Canyon, another few $100 isn't going to decide whether I go or not. It's the principle of it. And when I recognize what I get for it, which is the Grand Canyon, paying attention to boaters that put in, and if I get hurt, a helicopter will come and get me out. It's the value is definitely there. So those are my thoughts. If anybody else has thoughts, throw me the comments. I love the comments. But yeah, that's where I'm at on that. Okay, topic, emergency repair. This is a lot of reading. I'm going to try to read this, but also maybe summarize some of it. I had a wake-up call last Sunday on the Tilton River when we sliced a tube open. So everybody knows the Tilton is, I think this is the section It's a class four-ish section of river in Washington. It's beautiful, awesome rapids. It's famous for having wood drop in it here and there, but a really special river up in Washington. It happened shortly after entering the gorge above Leap of Faith and committing ourselves to the gorge ahead. I've done it once. I don't remember the name of the rapids, but I think Leap of Faith is a rapid on the section I'm thinking of. Had we run into any other problems that day, it could have easily compounded into a cold night in an unplanned bivvy. Yeah, and like when I go boating, especially in the winter like this in bigger groups, I am really conscientious about time because and in the morning, if you know, people show up late and then they have to go get a latte and then we get to put in, they're getting really slow to get ready, and then somebody gives a long talk and we don't put in until noon in the winter day, I'm really frustrated. Because I have been a part of several bivouac situations, hiking out in the dark situations, and I'm hypersensitive to winter boating and getting late starts. And then if you get a late start and you throw in a 90-minute equipment repair, a wrap, like it goes to a serious hazard. Like staying out overnight on a river like this is a hazard. It's dangerous, and it's going to freak a lot of people out. So. When I hear that, I hear like something could have compounded a cold night. That's a thing that can really happen. If I'm going to go on a trip like this, if we're not launching by like 10 a.m., I might just turn around and go home. Like I don't want to be a part of these things. I've done it enough personally. Okay, so anyway, our attempts at repair the boat were mostly a failure and waste of daylight. Terry just wasn't sticking. Type A and a hypalon high side. Despite our best efforts to clean and dry the surface area, it would not adhere. We ultimately used a speedy stitcher to sew the gash closed. We helped keep water out, but it did not hold air. We finished the run with a single deflated chamber in the stern. This is surprising to me. It's a bummer when you're trying to, you repair something and it doesn't work and you have to redo it. That's time ticking and, again, frustrating. Type A tirade should stick to hypalon high side. I'm surprised to hear that, honestly. I'm surprised to hear that. And one thing, if it's a big enough gash, and there's a photo we're about to look at, if you can get tarried on the inside and then do an outside patch, that works pretty well if it's a big gash. But you're saying it's just not sticking, which is really interesting to me. Maybe it was bad tarried. Maybe it was really cold. And for some, I haven't done a whole lot of tarried in really cold conditions, but honestly, like, I'm surprised tarried should work. The tarried patch came off completely within minutes of hitting the water and never really held air. Perhaps a bit of sandpaper or something to scuff the material would have helped. I have something covering what I'm trying to read here. Maybe some cotton cloth to get it dry would have helped. A small umbrella for rain. Yeah. I mean, you definitely want it dry. And so getting some cotton, really making sure it's dry, I think is key. If it's wet, obviously it's hard to adhere. Cleaning helps for sure. So I think with using Tarade cleaning, I bet a little bit of heat would help. Like if you had like a little, in my safety kit, we'll pull in a second. I have like a little torch to start fires, but just a little bit of heat might've helped. Like maybe get the surface of the boat. It's really cold out right now. I should go practice Tarade prep, like attaching it outside to see. Maybe heating up the fabric a little bit. Don't burn it. Don't melt it because then it's just more expensive to repair. But like, just heating it up might help. I don't think scuffing it's a good idea. You scuff it up when you're doing glue, but I don't think when you're doing Tarade you want to scuff it up. A small umbrella, yes. If it's raining and you're trying to do Tarade, you can just really never get it dry. The Tarade patch came off completely within minutes of hitting the water and never really held there. Yeah. And it could be the pressure. Like if you put a Tarade patch on too, like don't pump it up all the way. You want it a little bit saggy. So it's not pushing on it too much. I have to really be there to understand what happened, but I've had really good luck with Tarade in these situations. Okay. And here's a picture of it right here. That's a pretty big gash. And so a gash like that, I would say needs an inside and outside patch. So I mean, what you do is you open you cut a piece of Tarade and you delicately put it through the hole on the ground. And then you put the material on that terrate. It's a delicate situation, but then the air, when you pump it up, is pushing against that, right? Against the boat, instead of pushing out the hole to push that the terrate off. So I would do inside, outside, terrate on the inside, terrate on the outside. And usually it's also hard to get the outside dry. And I'm looking at it right now. I mean, I see drops of water around there. So, I mean, it doesn't look dry to me like that, but anyway, let's get back to the rest of the question. So on a tear like that, inside outside terrade, I wouldn't expect just outside terrade to last unless you had the tube a bit soggy and were really careful with it. Okay, we also had an unexpected wood portage and a close call on a pin rock in final Boulder Garden Rapid. If you're interested in a full breakdown of a 2.5 minute edit, I'm going to bring the edit up in a second because it's pretty cool. And you're not offended by constructive criticism. Awesome. I can just torch you. That's great. Thank you. But this is the thing. This is exactly the thing. On those winter trips when it gets dark at like 5, if you get your late start and you put a hole in something and somebody gets stuck on a rock and there's a log portage and the group is big, bigger groups are unwieldy, you get messy real quick. And so like if I'm on the Tilton and there's, you know, people I don't know or people I know that are slow and more than 5 boats and we're running late, I'm out. I'm just not going to go. I don't want that stress. And if trip details are here, January 12th, Tilton, that's like last week, 9 miles, put in at 11:30. That's pushing it. Take out at 3:30. Not bad. All the stuff. And, let's see, what repair materials do you carry on local day trips that are a bit more remote or don't have road access? Like basically terrade. I have my kit right here. I did a video. I made a video about my winter boating kit that, so you'll find in the video that's coming out, I have headlamps everywhere and terrade everywhere. This first aid kit has a headlamp in it for the night, getting stuck out at night. And let's see, I got a bunch of rescue stuff like webbing and things like that. This is my little winter kit. This is the lighter I talked about. This, if I need to start a fire, here's fire starters here. Another headlamp. This I might use this little Soto thing, to maybe heat up the material before putting terrade. But you got to be careful. And again, the second headlamp. Headlamps are nice. And fire starters if you're stuck at a night. And in here somewhere is my little repair kit. And this is my repair kit. And all that's in here is there's duct tape and terrade. So the terrade's not in here. I'm not going to open this up here for everybody right now because you watch the video. This is all the tools you need. So as important as terrade, you need spare or spinning things, oar locks. I have a spare pin for Pins Eclipse. I have like a channel locks, several wrenches, screwdrivers. I have all kinds of tools, things to fix metal things. It's just full of metal tools. They just pull one random thing out. Scissors to cut terrade. It also helps to like on the terrade, cut a little rounded corners. And so having scissors to cut it really helps. Let me pull one more random thing out. Oh, this is a ratchet with a half inch socket. Half inches is what the NRS frames use. So like as important as fixing the raft, it's fixing all the frame and the oars and things that break like that. So, okay. So going back to the question here was blah, blah, blah. We had an unexpected wood portage. Oh, wait. Any tips or tricks for emergency repairs, particularly terrade? Inside outside patches, maybe heat it up, cut round the corners. Cause if a square corner hits something, it'll pull it off. Maybe wait a tiny bit, although type A terrade has an immediate bonding time. So don't wait too long. What are we missing? I mean, I think you did it right. And then what could we have done better besides not hitting the rock to start with? Yeah, that would be the big one to me. Don't hit the rock. Yeah. And you ended up doing a good job. I mean, sewing this is no easy task. I mean, that took time too. And I've been out there before. We just didn't even sew it. We just let it roll. Like even if it gets full of water, like, I mean, this sewing is better than not sewing it. But if daylight's going away, I might just let it rip even without doing that. Oh, and going back to one thing with the inside patch with terrade, is I've seen repair people make the hole bigger so they can get the terrate in there. So if your hole is like this, if your hole is like 4 inches and you can't get the terrate in for the inside patch, make it 6 inches, and a terrate patch, an inside patch with 6 inches is better than just an outside patch for a 4-inch tear, which is an interesting thing to think about. So I'll say back to the question. I think I answered everything. Yeah, I think you guys, I mean, you did what you did. I really think the terrade should have worked, and I'd highly recommend practicing a terrade, you know, on your own. I have some thwarts out back that we use for our classes that have holes in them. And I put terrade in our class 4 schools. We put terrade on them. We put big holes in them and practice with them, but it's always in warmth. I've never done it in cold. So maybe I'll do it in cold and report back to you. Okay. So I have the video here and I say we watch it. And I think I need to put my headphones on because it's going to maybe have be aware of. Is there audio? I'm going to turn the audio off. Then I have to wear the headphones. So this is the paddle boat, turns out. Tilton. Yeah, this is the section of Tilton I've done. This is, I think if I remember right, like you're in like the first rapid right now, the first big rapid, a couple miles down. And yeah. Yeah. If I'm going to critique it, it's weird for me to not have a guide back right, or somebody in the back. It's hard to control the boat like this. Like having 4 people in the same spots, and that's all 4 know exactly here. I think this is the hit. Yeah, that shouldn't have happened. That shouldn't happen. Like, this is not a hard rapid. Like right here, coming in. There's the cat boat right there. There's another rapid. That was a close one. It's really hard, like I said, to control a paddle boat from that position. I would want somebody in the very back who can be doing big draws, big pries, that can be working on the angle of the boat and having a vision for what's going on. I'm not sure if there's a guide in charge of this. There's no guide in charge of this. It's kind of a mess. But if there is, it's really hard to control the boat from that middle section. And it looks like people are paddling together. I mean, there's a rock down there on the far left. You're turning sideways. You shouldn't be sideways. You shouldn't be pointed left when there's a rock down there. At this point, like, I'm already nervous you're going to hit the rock because, yeah, you shouldn't be pointed to the left. But you're going down, out of control. A really good guide at this point could swing the boat around on their own, like swing all the way around, just call a forward paddle away. Right. If you're in the back of the boat, you can do a huge, if you're on the right, do a huge pry, swing the bow point to the right, and just forward paddle to the right away from the wall. But none of that's happening. And I'm surprised that popped the boat. I've hit way more rocks, way harder than that. It could have been bad luck. It could be that spot has just a sharp rock. Yep. And there's, and I mean, that's in at this point, this is work. You have to pull the boat up on shore. You know, it's a lot of work. This is very time consuming. And there they are. That's the log portage that they had to do. The unexpected log portage. Oh, fall. So this is the position. That's good to say. This is the position. We're going back to here. Let's play it again. Log portage. Which takes time. Like, this is what I'm thinking, back right, and you control the boat better from that position. You can do pries and draws. Nice save, though. That was sweet. Grab the throw bag on the way out. I'm not a fan of those throw bags, but it did save you. And there's the floppy tube. Oh, that's not good. I mean, the good thing about the floppy tube here is it's harder to wrap or flip because it's floppy. Like, if that tube was pumped up, you might, oh, you're actually kind of wrapped. See the water coming on the right? Water coming on the right? The water's coming over the tube. Oh, this is cool footage. If that tube had been more pumped up, You might have wrapped or flipped there. That might have saved you. Yeah, I wouldn't call this top tier guiding. But you're getting down. You're on an adventure. I love it. You guys are coming together as a team, overcoming all the obstacles, having a good time, obviously. Like, that's just good living. I love it. I mean, look at that. Sewing Master, positive vibes, boat donation, carnage appreciation. This is everything I love about boating. People going out there to explore a cool river, like challenging themselves, learning from the experience, and just having fun with it. Like, this is, I wish I was there. Like, I'm bummed to have missed this. This is just the best. Like, great job. Thanks for the video. Thanks for the passion. And my only feedback on the tear is like, the tearage should have worked, and maybe think of an inside patch next time. So nice job. Cool adventure. All right, moving on. Sailway and Middle Fork Salmon Snowpack. Storms have been tracking your way this year, it seems, more than Northern California. Can you assess the current snowpack for Middle Salmon and Sailway? Too early to predict the future, but what is the current state? Love the show. Okay, so, you know, I don't really look at snowpack. And just so everybody knows, I guide on the Middle Fork. My job is the Middle Fork. So this is important to me. But I don't really look at snowpack, like, for real until April. I'd look at it now just to make conversation. Where he's like, what's the snowpack? I'm like, oh, it's 112%. And it's like making conversation. But it doesn't affect me at all. I think of snowpack sort of like I think of a playoff football game. Like, we're in the beginning of the second quarter. The score can be 12-0. And who knows? The score's going to end up 37-31. And who knows who's going to be winning, right? And snowpack doesn't go in a straight line. Just because it's average now doesn't mean it's going to be average at the end. And it probably won't be average at the end. And so, you know, it's like asking me, hey, we're in the second quarter of a playoff game or a Super Bowl. Who's going to win? Like, I don't know. Tom Brady's down by 10, but it's Tom Brady. Or Mahomes is down. You know, it's Mahomes. So we're going to – please don't listen to what I say to make any kind of decisions. We're just going to talk about this in making conversation. This is just making conversation level. It doesn't mean anything. On Whitewater Guidebook, I have a page that has all my things in one place. It has all the predictions, and this graph I use a lot. And so the two green lines are basically average. Like, I think one's 30-year average, one's mean, or who knows. They're about average. And we were... like, if you follow the black line, we were crushing average. We were above average. Oh, and the cool thing, sorry, let me go back. The green lines are average. The gray is the lowest it's been to the highest it's been, right? So the gray is what has happened in the past. It's never been in the white. It's never been so high, it's up here. And it's never been so low, it's down here. And honestly, this peak right here, I've been here a few times, where we get to here and we're just above the lowest ever, those seasons are kind of rough. And so for me, I really want to beat this peak. I don't really care if we're like halfway to the average. As long as we beat the peak, I'm pretty happy. And you can see we're already above that peak. Now, we could lose the snow. We could regress, right? It could stop snowing. It could warm up. We could regress down to the peak. But even though we're average right now, we have enough snowpack so far that we've beat this minimum peak. So I'm pretty happy. As an outfitter, my goal is to be between 80 and 120% of normal, because higher than 120%, there starts to be nervousness about the safety on the earlier trips. And lower, of course, just means August is expensive because we have to fly a lot and we break stuff and it's just hard on people. So we're average. I mean, look at that, the black line. We're crushing it, and it's just been January has been brutal. You can see that peak happened in the beginning of January, and we're actually degrading a little bit, but we're average, which is the best we can be. If we end up at this peak and we're average, that's awesome. But I want to remind everybody, we're in the beginning of the second quarter of a football game. Like, it could do anything. It could go down. It could go to zero and then back up to the highest ever. it never follows the green lines. It always goes back and forth, up and down. It never does average. It messes with your head the whole time. And I wish we could look back at this in May and be like, huh, remember how naive we were in the middle of January? Like, it's going to be doing some crazy thing between now and May or April. The peak is, oh, well, the average peak is in April, really? Huh. That's surprising. Usually the peak's in May. That's interesting to me. But anyway, those are my thoughts. Okay, moving on. NFL Garage. Yep. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of correlations between football and flows. Cool. And this page, you can find it on Whitewater Guidebook. If you go to even Bucket List, go to Middle Fork of the Salmon and just click that flow button right there, it takes you to it. Like, it's, I make this available for everybody. There used to be right here a Idaho snow water equivalent map that was really cool, but they took it away. So we just have these three graphs that are really helpful and links to more reports and things, just stuff, information I use. All right, back to here, back to the questions. All right, setting safety. I think this is the last question. Yeah, last question. Hi, I'm 75 and a 40-year rafter. Last October, myself and another rafter and an IKer boated the lower salmon. The river was 3130 CFS on the day we went through snow hole. At that level, I believe it's a 4+. There was no visible clear line through. We figured our best was to get as far river right as possible. I made it through and into the bottom, into the eddy at the bottom right. Before I keep reading, I want to point out, I've never done the lower salmon. I have no idea what snow hole looks like. And I'm pretty sure it's not class 4+. I'm pretty sure. But from the little bit I know about the lower salmon, it might be class 4, but I don't think it's 4+. And was there no visible clear line through? Did you scout from shore, or is this just you from the boats up above looking down? Because if you don't see a clear line through from the boats, you should scout. That's when you scout, right? If you're like above it and you're like, I don't see how to get down, eddy out, walk down, look at the rapid from shore. That's the best way to see the lines. Okay. Anyway, I pulled out a throw bag and waited for the IKer. He came through swimming. I threw the throw bag, but it was too short to reach him. I didn't pull into the current to rescue, thinking the rafter still has to go through. The rafter got tossed out in his boat, which didn't flip. Again, my rebagged throw bag rope was too short to reach him, but his boat was pulled into the same eddy I was in. Both boaters self-rescued to the downstream shore, and I tied up the unattended raft and pulled it out of the eddy. I've been wondering if I should have chased the first or second swimmer instead of staying in the eddy. If I left the eddy, not sure we could have gotten the other rafter's raft out of the eddy. Any thoughts would be appreciated. So I also, in terms of videos I've done recently, I think I just did one about setting safety. I think it's actually published already. Sometimes I forget which ones are published. Did I do one about, yeah, setting safety at Whitewater Rapids? It's on January 2nd. It's worth watching. And yeah, just look at other Gear Garage videos. It's just called Setting Safety at Whitewater Rapids. Here, I'll even bring it up here. Actually, I'm not going to bring it up. Yeah, I'll bring it up. Let me see if I can get it into the right place here. Where I talk about, starts so good too. Well, let's go back. Let me bring this up. Everybody give me a second, please. And let's go. Okay, so this rapid is in Iceland. It's called Green Room. And it's a pretty juicy rapid. People flipping a lot. And this is a kayaker and a throw bagger. They're setting safety for rapid. This is a good example of setting safety. The guy jumps back in his boat. I really like this short thing. And in this video, I'm not going to watch the video, but I talk about setting safety. And there's moving safety, which is like you're all moving together, setting safety for each other. They're sending one person down to be a hero, which is kind of what you did. And then there's, you know, sending people down a few at a time. There's a few different techniques you can do. And this is just my opinion based on my experience, what I think. There's no official book that says how to set safety. I don't think. If you find one, let me know, because before I did the video, I tried to find literature on setting safety before I came up with my own talk about it. Okay. So what I would say is you were kind of a hero. You went down a rapid not knowing if you could even make it, right? And if you had flipped or swam, who rescues you? Like, that's an issue, right? I hopefully you self-rescue. And and both of these guys self-rescued. And it's the lower salmon. It's not like there's a class five just downstream or there's like continuous water. It seems like a place you can self-rescue. But you should ask yourself, if something happened to you, who's rescuing you? And also, like, if you hit your head and go unconscious, who's there for you? And so you were pretty exposed by doing that. The other thing I'm going to say is, like, having a throw bag at the bottom of a rapid is pretty weak safety. And so did you pull out the throw bag? And also, were you in your raft when you pulled out the throw bag or on shore? Did you, like, tie your boat up and go on shore and throw the throw bag? Or were you in your raft with a throw bag in your hand? I'm going to say, if you were in your raft with a throw bag in your hand, that's dangerous. Like, people have died that way because you throw the bag to the person, you start pulling them in, but then the boat starts doing weird things and there's tangles with the rope. And sometimes you let go of the rope and the person is tangled in the rope. And so if your boat's tied to shore, I'd say, sure, you can throw a bag from your boat. But if you're just floating in the eddy, I wouldn't recommend throwing a throw bag. I would say your best safety is you and your boat. So instead of a throw bag, which you've missed two throw bag tosses because the throw bag was too short. Well, that's, it can be too short. You can miss throw. The person can not catch it right. And what if one of these people, again, was unconscious? They're not going to respond to a throw bag. And so in my video, I make this point. Throw bags are not the safety you want. The safety you want is you in the boat getting the person. So what I would have done is, this is hard to explain in audio form. And I guess I could pull the, can I pull up the whiteboard? Can I do this? Let me make myself big. We'll pull the whiteboard out. So if there's a rapid here, and hopefully you guys can hear me, I'm away from the mic now. But if there's a rapid here and there's an eddy, if you came down first into the eddy and then Icare's coming down and Raptor's coming down, when Icare's coming down, what I would choose to do is pull out in front of them, not right in front of them so they crash into you, but space it so that if they fall out, then you can just row upstream and pull them into your boat. So you hanging out an eddy isn't, like, that's a good position for safety in your boat. If you're throwing a throw bag from here, it's pretty weak, right? But if the person's coming down and you pull out and they come into you and they swim, you can pull them in your boat, or they can at least grab your boat. Even if you can't pull them in, even if you're so busy rowing, they can at least grab their boat and potentially jump into your boat or use your boat as a platform to get back in their boat. Lots of things. And then, but if you pull out and homeboy comes down safe, homeboy should be eddying out. And if you're floating down, then homeboy can be safety and pull out in front of this guy or any number of things. But you out in the current in front of them is the best safety. That's the safety you want in your boat, not a throw bag, right? A throw bag is sort of a last-ditch effort. Now, the throw bag is useful. Let's say you guys did the really smart thing. You pulled over here and scouted, and you're like, whoa, we scouted. And you went down and go, that's a big rapid. Maybe somebody hangs out down here with a throw bag somewhere smart on shore so that when you come down, you at least have some safety. We do recognize that it's bad safety because you missed two throws. Homeboy might too. But when I said you came down first, if something had happened to you, and again, you go unconscious for some reason, that's a bad thing. But if something happens to you, you have no safety. If you had scouted, you could have had at least something, which is dude with a throw bag, right? Which is something. Then you come down, catch the eddy, homeboy comes back up here, Homeboy runs down. You pull out in front of him. And then you guys figure out how to be safety for the third person and fourth person and fifth person. So my main point here would be your best safety. When you said you, let's go back to your to the topic here. When this is about setting safety, in my opinion, and watch the video because I go over this pretty clearly, your best safety is a person in a boat going to get the thing. I think the reason a lot of people think that a throw bag is good safety is because they're taking rescue classes from land-based rescuers. And when I say land-based rescuers, I mean like firefighters, first responders, search and rescue. Those people, when they get to a scene, they only have throw bags. They have themselves and throw bags. And they have like PFDs that you can tie a little rope to and jump in the river and save people. They don't, and sometimes they have boats. They do have boats sometimes, but rarely. Right? Most of their things are them with ropes. And so the techniques a lot of people learn, and as boaters, we take classes from non-boaters and they're just like rope, 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 rope. Every swimmer means rope, right? As boaters, we need to break that habit. We have boats and we're skilled in using them. So our boat should be the rescue vessel when appropriate instead of ropes, which are dangerous. Those are my thoughts on that. I would love to get, if anybody has opinions on this, like if I'm wrong, tell me. I've been thinking about this a lot because I keep seeing people in situations throw ropes they should not be throwing. And I watched them. I'm like, what are you going to do when the person grabs it? Like, where are they going to go? And you're not set up to have them, you know, to hold on to them. Like, I just see a lot of errant rope throws through in person and through video. I see more bad, poorly thought out throws than good throws in the real world. And so I'm pretty anti throw bags. No, throw bags are, I shouldn't say that. Throw bags are probably our best tool. They're a great tool for a lot of things. I mean, it's not just getting swimmers out of the water. It's like getting a rope to a boat. It's hanging your clothes in camp. There's a bunch of uses for throw bags, whether they're like rescue or they're just like, you know, I need a rope for a tarp. But we should be in the habit of using our boats for safety primarily when appropriate. And when we can't use our boats for safety, use the throw bag, but use it intelligently and try to do it responsibly. Okay, that was a lot of information. I just want to go back because I really like this little piece of video here. Let's put this back up here. Add to stage. This, again, this has all the elements. Now, there's a safety kayaker right here who isn't getting a person. And that's not always a job of the safety kayakers. The safety kayaker is giving information. Swim here, swim there, get in the boat, right? The safety kayaker is there for moral support, right? There's one guide in the water right down here. This is Tarzan. He's a heroic, legendary Nepalese guide. This is Hunter, too. Hunter's in Nepali, who's an amazing safety kayaker. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 swimmers. And here's Mark. His boat's already come down, and Hunter was his safety. And he's prepared himself in a location he knows as with a throw bag. And Mark is a ninja with a throw bag. Like this, he's making throws not everybody can make. So there's so much happening here. Watch this. Oh, I gotta press play over there. What? Let's see what works. Well, Mark just dumped a rope down to that person and can save that person. The guide over here, Tarzan's getting back in the boat. He's self-rescuing himself so he can rescue the rest of the people. Now watch this. Mark is using one end of the throw bag. He just took whatever it was, 15 feet, and just threw 15 feet of rope. Already has one person on. Right. And now it's throwing the throw bag for a second person who's going to get away from things. With one throw bag, Marks has two people. He's in a stable position and has a hold of them. Let's go back to this. Now, Tarzan over here is going to start pulling people in with Hunter's assistance. So like Mark has these three people under control. This person's going to, you know, eventually climb on the rock or whatever, hopefully. And then Tarzan's going to pull these four people in. Hunter will probably never touch a person. His job is to maintain downstream safety, right? He's that person. Nobody's going to get ahead of him. And I think that's a key thing. Like, once a swimmer passes you as the lead boat, that person's super exposed. So Hunter in this video could say, he even taps that person. He's such a good safety kayaker. Watch him. He even taps that person and pushes them a little bit to the raft, right? And now he's thinking, okay, I'm going to go downstream and maintain ultimate downstream safety. I don't need to rescue a person. I'm here to provide a downstream safety net, and I'm here to like tell people where to go, what to do. Now, Tarzan's going to pull, looks like, three people in the raft. Mark's going to get three people on shore, and they don't even need Hunter other than moral support. So this is a really good example of downstream safety. So, okay. So back to the question. I think I covered it. I've been wondering if I should have chased the first or second swimmer instead of staying in the eddy. You should. Our goal should be to provide a downstream safety net for everybody. And so I would have chased the first swimmer. Yeah. The second swimmer will eventually come to you. And so I would have chased the first swimmer. Do not let a swimmer pass you. If you're you don't want a swimmer to pass you again, because who knows where they're going to go. It's the lower salmon. It's probably flat. They're probably just going to swim to shore, but you do not want a swimmer ahead of you. And then there's one other comment here. If I had left the eddy, not sure if we could have gotten the other rafters raft out of the eddy. Oh, you could have. You could have. But remember, people over equipment. Let's take care of people first. Let's get people out of the water and safe. You'll figure the raft out. I don't know the rapid, and there's some rapids where it's really hard to get them out of eddies, but I think you'll figure it out. I think I would focus on people first. And again, that ultimate downstream safety, make sure no people swim by you in there. Okay, cool. I think we're done. That was a lot of questions, a lot of topics. Thank you all for watching as always. We cover a lot of things. I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks. We might do a show next week. We might not. It might be a couple of weeks. But if you have questions while I'm away, go to whitewaterguidebook.com. Actually, I'll pull it up right now. Go to Whitewater Guidebook. And if you see the Gear Garage tab, hit ask a question. Throw a question in there. That's the best place to ask us questions, because we catalog them and we get them ready for the shows. So please ask a question. And as always, thanks for watching the show. Thanks for all the commenters. And we'll see you next time.